Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Joining me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. Well, Stone, I think it's pretty safe to say that NDSU and SDSU are who we thought they were. What do you think?
110%. I don't think you, Kevin, me, Stone, and the rest of FCS Nation is surprised, but in the fashion that North Dakota State is doing it, and in the fashion that South Dakota State is catching up, getting back up to gold tier, feel like getting all of their feet underneath every single one of them on the field, yeah, these two are head and shoulders above the rest.
Well, we got an awful lot of games to get to from last week and a short time to get there. Let's get it on. Up first, number one, North Dakota State, 51. Number 14, South Dakota, 13. I really thought the Yotes would come in there and compete better than this. But Stone, this game was over with from the opening whistle, sir.
It was. Huge homecoming win. We both thought the Yotes had a chance to hang in this one and have it close in the third and fourth quarter. That wasn't the case. I mean, I don't think there's enough to be said about Cole Payton right now. And you hear his head coach, Tim Polasek, just singing his praises. But I don't have to go through his stat line. He was crispy clean. He was obviously FCS Nation Radio's National Offensive Player of the Week. They go as he goes, and right now he's clicking on every single cylinder that he's got.
547 total yards for North Dakota State to 296 for South Dakota, and those 296, they came way too late to make a difference in the outcome of this here contest. And NDSU, everybody strives for balance, right, Stone? Well, 274 rushing yards and 273 passing yards is a pretty darn good balance, isn't it? Number two, South Dakota State, 51, Mercyhurst, 7. Well, look at it this way, FCS Nation. This is probably the last week we're going to mention Mercyhurst for a while. I don't know about y'all, but I'm going to kind of miss them a little bit. It's a scrappy bunch. They play hard. There's a lot to like about them. They just rolled all over Mercyhurst, and we thought they might do some things in this ballgame that they don't normally do, which is try to score as many as they can, and they certainly did here.
This team's getting better and better as the weeks go on, and for me to be saying that about South Dakota State is just funny in itself.
So the loneliest guy in Brookings, South Dakota on Saturday was the Jackrabbit punter, huh?
Yeah. Yes. Those are fun days for them, though. I have asked them that before. Those are their favorite days. They feel like they stretch for no reason. They get to eat a big meal. They get to put on the uniform, look good, get pictures taken of them, and they don't even drop a bead of sweat.
What a life. Number four, Montana, 41. Number six, Idaho, 30. Score's kind of misleading here. Montana controlled this thing from Jump Street. They really did. Idaho just hasn't developed a good enough passing game yet to compete really well in a game like this, Stone. They really miss that Hayden Hatton type of guy who can go down the field and win 50-50 balls. They really don't have that right now, and it shows.
No, some of the best teams in the country, regardless of the division, and you even see it in the pros, time and time again. And let me just hone it in for Montana State. On third down, who are you throwing the ball to, Kevin?
Taco Dowler, dude, that's who they're going to target on third down. He's their best threat in the receiving core.
Trust me, as a quarterback, you need that guy on third down that you know is going to have at least a yard or two of separation, regardless of the concept and regardless of the route that's being run. And I think that is what is missing for Idaho. They're good defensively. They're good enough offensively to score 30 on a really good Montana defense. It's just sustaining drives and staying within arm's length of their opponent, who obviously is superior to them. That's what they're missing, Kev. You're right on.
Michael Wortham, 164 all-purpose yards and two touchdowns for Montana. And Eli Gilliam was awesome again for the Grizz. All he did was rush for 142 more yards and another pair of touchdowns. And Ayat, efficient, 17 to 23, 223, and a touchdown. This Montana's team has scored 40 points three times this year, and that's got to be scary for the rest of FCS. Number five, Montana State, 57, Eastern Washington, 3. Stone, we said we needed to see an offensive explosion from the Bobcats, and boy howdy, did they give it to us.
Simply put, we needed it. They gave it to us. They needed it more than their fan base and us as media needed it. So it's good to see Eastern Washington, a team that we thought could be tricky. No, say the Cats.
Incarnate Word, 38. Number 9, Abilene Christian, 7. This was an upset. I think maybe somebody might have called that on the show last week. I don't know who that could have been. I would never toot my own horn. But Incarnate Word, I'm not quite sure who this team is, Stone. They ran the ball for twice as many yards as they threw it for last week. What is going on with Incarnate Word? Are they a running team now?
I think this has more to do with an Abilene Christian team, who was a top 10 team in the entire subdivision, just to get boat raced by an Incarnate Word team, holding a loss to a school like Nichols. It's interesting, both of these schools, I do think the takeaway here is more on Abilene Christian. Who actually are they? Are they fool's gold? I don't think we even know coming out of this one.
Number 10, Tennessee Tech, 35. Tennessee State, 8. Tennessee Tech is just straight beating people to sleep, Stone, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. And the numbers aren't dynamic. I mean, they're not putting up 500 yards of total offense or anything crazy like that. They're just really efficient when they have the football. And Tennessee State had no answer for that Golden Eagles offense all day, and they couldn't move the ball on the defense. Tennessee Tech's a scary team going forward. I really like what Bobby Wilder's done there.
Yeah, you're damn right, they're scary. This team knows how to tote the pill and tote it properly. Quintel Quinn is a dude. This guy just seems to surpass the 100-yard mark, and he's going to continue to do so. This team's good on the ground, and they're also good up front defensively, and that's a recipe that makes Bobby Wilder happy. We know that to be a fact. He talks about it time and time again. He likes his beef. He likes his size. He likes leaning on people because a lot of teams in the conference can't do that. This Tech team is for Rizzle.
Number 17, UC Davis, 34. Weber State, 12. And a lot of times we'll read off the stats and think they have really great meaning and you know, it makes us sound smart or whatever. But in this ball game, Weber State had 313 total yards. UC Davis had 469. Okay, Davis outgained them by a wide margin. Davis had the only turnover in the game, and Weber State controlled the time of possession. This is one of them ball games where everything you look at that tells you who won is for the team that lost, and sometimes it just be like that. Number 17, West Georgia, 27. Southern Utah, 24. This was a hell of a ball game. West Georgia never quit. Southern Utah, they fought the whole way. West Georgia was able to kick a field goal with about 1 second left on the clock to win the ball game. That's a long trip, and West Georgia made me look really, really bad in the pick segment. Once again, Stone, it's a trend.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when are you going to – I don't even know whether to say hop on the train or hop off of the train. I mean, there was nobody more on the train than you. Preseason, week one, pretty much picking these games to a T, and here you are now 0-2. Don't give up on this team. This team is learning how to win ugly games, and that is a head coach's dream. This team was good from the start. West Georgia, they found themselves, I think, with a 24-3 lead, I think, at one point in the third quarter, so got sloppy in the second half, but all that means is there's good tape to watch, so they'll clean it up, and this train will keep it chugging.
Mercer, 38, number 22, East Tennessee State, 34, and called that one too. And I think East Tennessee State is a ball club that they don't get a win on the road against ranked Furman this week. It's going to get ugly in Johnson City with the quickness. There's a lot of egos involved in that football team. FBS starting quarterback, egos, two of them. That type of thing can splinter a team. It's dangerous territory for ETSU, and Mercer has proven since the quarterback change that loss to Presbyterian, which doesn't look nearly as bad now as it did then, is a thing of the past. A true freshman quarterback is not making true freshman mistakes. They're pushing the football down the field. This Mercer team has got their stuff in a pile.
At the beginning of the season, we knew Mercer was good, right? Preseason top 10, bona fide at that. And they looked terrible. And a lot of people threw them away. But here they are. The entire time they were a good football team. They just needed to find a spark. And they absolutely did that regardless of age. This team knows how to play defense, and it's funny I say that. This is a game that equated over 70 points, I understand. But when it's needed, this team can batten the hatches and suffocate you because they are so good up front. They really are. So look out for this team to just keep winning games and keep stockpiling W's.
The recap segment is brought to you by GameStrat. Looking to gain a real edge on game day? GameStrat is the number one choice for in-game video in the FCS and is trusted by championship programs at every level. With instant access to in-game video, lightning-fast uploads, and no internet required, GameStrat helps coaches make real-time adjustments that win football games. It's easy to use, ultra-reliable, and backed by top-rated support. Don't settle for less. Upgrade to GameStrat and keep up with what the top programs in the country are choosing for their in-game video. Visit GameStrat.com to learn more and schedule your demo today. That's GameStrat.com.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. We're going to put a bow on last week right here and give you the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The FCS Nation National Offensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual, is North Dakota State quarterback Cole Payton. Payton accounted for 375 yards, a total offense, and three touchdowns. He was 14 of 18 passing for 273 yards and two touchdowns, and he toted the mail 11 times for 102 yards and one touchdown. Congratulations to Cole Payton for being the FCS Nation National Offensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The FCS Nation National Defensive Player of the Week is linebacker Shane Hartzell from Villanova. Hartzell registered a team-high 10 tackles, four of them for a loss, with two sacks and two quarterback hurries in Villanova's 31-24 win over William & Mary. Congratulations to Cole Payton, quarterback, North Dakota State, and Shane Hartzell, linebacker, Villanova, for being named the FCS Nation National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. And here is the FCS Nation Top 25 for Week 5. Number 1, the North Dakota State Bison. Number 2, the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Number 3, the Montana Grizzlies. Number 4, the Tarleton State Texans. And number 5, the Montana State Bobcats. Stone, a little something was different this week in the top 5. Well, we move Montana up to number 3. I think that they deserve it. Look, 40 points three times so far this season. Have a win over a very good Idaho team. Montana deserve to be ranked higher than Tarleton State right now. This is going to be something that might change week to week. We'll have to see. Number 6, the Southern Illinois Salukis. Number 7, the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles. Number 8, the Illinois State Redbirds. Rising to number 9, the Monmouth Hawks. And rounding out the top 10, the North Dakota Fighting Hawks.
Monmouth, obviously the one that sticks out here at number 9. What was it that made you pull the trigger and throw them inside the top 10?
Derek Robertson, he can have just a regular day at the office. He's going to throw for 400 yards. The kid can spin it. If you haven't seen Monmouth, if you haven't got your eyeballs on him yet, do that this week. Falling to number 11, the Idaho Vandals. Number 12, Lehigh. Number 13, the Lamar Cardinals. Number 14, UC Davis Aggies. And rounding out the top 15, the Rhode Island Rams.
Out of the bunch that you just rattled off, who are you confident in that they find themselves inside the top 10 here? Which one should FCS Nation have circled as a possible sneaky, call it, contender?
I think it's probably Idaho, but you can also put Lehigh in that category. I think UC Davis has fallen back a little bit from last year, and we've thought that since the beginning of the season. And I think that Rhode Island is a paper tiger. I've said that repeatedly on this show. So I think Idaho and Lehigh are the two teams that could give people problems once the weather turns real cold here soon. Number 16, the West Georgia Wolves. Number 17, the Northern Arizona Lumberjacks. Number 18, the Jackson State Tigers. Number 19, Incarnate Word. Number 20 is Abilene Christian.
Be realistic here when we talk about this West Georgia team. You and I, we've had fun over the past, so call it a month maybe, about just hyping this team up, talking about how good they were. We knew that preseason, but what actually is their ceiling, not only in the UAC, but holistically?
Look, they're playing with house money. They're not going to be able to go to the playoffs this year due to their transition period. So I expect them just to continue to play loose. They got nothing to lose and only things to gain in the future. I like this bunch a lot. West Georgia could very easily be a team that we see with one loss, maybe two at the end of the season. I really like this squad. Doesn't mean I'm going to pick them this week because I don't want to hurt them by being on their side, Stone. They seem to do better when I'm not. Maybe we'll have to see for segment 5, the pick segment, but I really like this West Georgia ball club. Number 21, the Austin P. Governors. Number 22, the Presbyterian College Blue Hose. Number 23, the Furman Paladins. And number 24, the Yale Bulldogs. And rounding out the top 25, the Mercer Bears.
The one highlighted without even being highlighted is Yale. Kind of tell the people why the heck Yale is inside of the top 25, and are they the real deal, at least in the Ivy League?
Well, we're going to find out. We'll talk to somebody who knows the Ivy League just about better than anybody else in the country. Tom Barton coming up in a couple of segments. But I really like this Yale team. The quarterback isn't the most talented guy. but he can do the things that they need him to do. They have a big, bruising running back and a talented group of wide receivers. And it's the Ivy League. They hadn't been playing 5 weeks, so we don't know a whole lot about everybody yet. But I like Yale so far, and I think that this is going to be a good football team before it's all said and done. It's time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, Stone Labanowitz and I will preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Now time for the preview segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I take a quick trip all over FCS Nation, and we preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, this one has Game of the Week written all over it, y'all. Number one, North Dakota State is at number eight, Illinois State.
Game of the week, I'm not quite there. On one hand, you have an Illinois State team who got taken in not one, but two overtimes against the North Alabama unit, Brent Dierman's unit. On the other, you have a North Dakota State squad who just absolutely took a South Dakota Coyote squad to the woodshed. I think both of these teams, where they stand right now, aren't really seeing eye to eye. I think this one has North Dakota State.
I've learned this over the years about Illinois State, that in a big ball game at home, that nobody circles the wagons like that fellow with the cowboy mustache. Don't count the Redbirds out at home in this one. Number two, South Dakota State is at Youngstown State. Stone, people have Youngstown State ranked. I'm not there yet. They run the quarterback an awful lot, and South Dakota State's not going to be a team you're going to be able to run QB power on and be successful against a whole lot. I don't like this matchup for the Penguins. What they do well is the strength of the South Dakota State defense. It's going to be tough sledding at home for Youngstown State, I believe.
Yeah, Youngstown State, I think they just have a case of we're in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, so we're really good, right? These fans, the media that backs them is just super boisterous. Whoever has this team ranked doesn't know what they're watching. Buckle up. Buckle up for all you loudmouths. You're going to need your seatbelt nice and tight here because South Dakota State, like I mentioned prior, just getting better and better every week, and Youngstown State not going to slow them down here. I like South Dakota State.
Number three, Montana is at Idaho State. It just seems like 2-3 weeks ago, we were talking about how Idaho State looked really good against UNLV in the opener, and they were going to be a factor in the Big Sky Conference. It hasn't worked out like that a whole bunch for them as we've moved on further into the season. But Montana, they've gotten better each week. You said that about the Jackrabbits. I seriously think Montana may be the most improved team from week one to week five that we see anywhere in FCS.
Yeah, Montana this season has just made me go back in seasons past on how much crap I feel like I gave them. This team is good. This team is really good. They're warranted to be number three, and they are getting better and better as the season goes. Lynnell Stein in one hand and a pistol in the other. This team's just killing it right now, and Idaho State, I feel like as a team, they're going to pick one or two spots to play really well against an opponent that they're obviously underdogs against. Can't say this is the one, but they will be up for it, that's for sure, especially at their place.
Southern Utah is at number four, Tarleton State.
Southern Utah, for me, is in the category of Mercyhurst. Like you said, it just seems like they're playing somebody a lot better than them. They're outgunned on paper, on tape, all the above here. But do see points coming in this one for all those who care. This Tarleton State squad is not going to slow down. There's nothing that I think can actually even slow them down except for themselves. But I want to see a lot of points here. I want to see Tarleton State get pushed. I want to see the secondary get pressed. I want to see some of these things happen. There's not enough to really break down this Tarleton State team, hence why we had to slide them back and put Montana in front of them. There's just not enough to go off of right now, and I'm hoping that Southern Utah gives us something to use.
Number five, Montana State is at number 17, Northern Arizona. Well, you weren't ready to call North Dakota State at Illinois State the game of the week. Is this the one you had circled? Because it could be game of the week B if NDSU at Illinois State's game of the week A. Ty Pennington, we both really like the way that young man plays football, and he's pretty darn good at it. He leads an offense that can put up points in a hurry. And Montana State, they put up a boatload of points last week against Eastern Washington. Northern Arizona's defense will be better than Eastern Washington's. Is it a great group? Are they going to limit Montana State to 13, 17 points, something like that? Probably not. I expect this one to be a shootout in Flagstaff.
If you're Ty Pennington, this is your Super Bowl, and we're talking about a Super Bowl in week six. You have a chance. You're hosting Montana State. You're better than Justin Lamson in just about every statistical category. On every bit of tape that you watch, you got the guy. You're leading this unit. This is a gettable game, as absurd as that sounds. And we could be just blatantly wrong here. And Montana State absolutely can go lay 45 on them, and this defense can bat in the hatches. I just think Ty Pennington in a game like this, all bets are off. Your playbook is wide open. You're going to be taking shots in the openers. The Lumberjacks got a little something to them. This one's spicy. I do think this one is the sneaky game of the week.
Indiana State is at number 6, Southern Illinois.
I don't like this matchup at all. I actually don't think you can find a worse matchup. Southern Illinois is just boat racing teams. They're trying to score 40, 50 points a week. Indiana State doesn't really pose any threat, especially defensively. We've seen teams put up dozens upon dozens on them. And, of course, this is just another one that we can designate a DJ Williams show. I think he lights up the scoreboard here.
Western Illinois is at number 17, Tennessee Tech. I think this game is a lot like the last one we just talked about. Tennessee Tech, they're not flashy on offense. They don't put up gaudy stats. But, man, they're scoring 30, 35, 40 points a ball game. It's impressive. The defense is sound. And I don't think there's a better tackling team in FCS football than Tennessee Tech. If you haven't got eyeballs on the Golden Eagles, watch this game this week. Watch the way that group carries themselves on defense. It's an impressive ball club, and they excel in all three phases. Bobby Wilder has turned that program around with the quickness. Delaware State is at number 9, Monmouth. This is going to be the Derek Robertson show. And just like Tennessee Tech, I said it when we went over them in the top 25 part of segment 2. If you haven't seen him play, get eyeballs on this ball game. If you like well-played, well-coached, well-schemed, down-the-field passing game, Monmouth, that offense has it all. They just got to get 2 stops on defense, and they're going to win the ball game. The question is, moving forward against tougher opponents, can they get those 2 stops to get the lead and play with the lead? And then you're done against that football team. It's an impressive offensive group. Just need a little help from their defense.
Fantastic call out. Just imagine being able to even utter the words, or let alone if you're Derek Robertson, wake up and say, hey, if my defense gets me 2 stops today, we're winning the football game. This game falls into that category. A lot of games, majority of games for D-Rob and this Monmouth squad, they equate to that. If they can get a few stops, they're going to win. So look out for just more offense upon offense upon offense. This guy, Derek Robertson, wants to fill his trophy case, and he's going to do it by handling teams that he should. This is one of those, but Monmouth is a team that has now crept into the top 10, and now they have expectations. So you got to play with a little more juice. You got to play all 4 quarters and no lulls, no lapse in judgments. It's going to matter come playoff time.
Number 10, North Dakota is at Northern Iowa. This would normally be a place where we would look at each other's stone and say, uh-oh, North Dakota has to go on the road. I think all of that stuff and that stigma is behind them. They got a brand new head coach. They got a brand new system, a brand new way of thinking. And I think that they may have exercised that demon. And you say, well, how'd they do that, Kev? They went to Montana and lost. Yes, but they were competitive. 2 years ago, a team that they had just like the one they have now would have gone to Missoula and lost by 5 touchdowns. They're figuring it out on the road, and Northern Iowa is not good. This will be a good combination, I believe, for the Fighting Hawks.
Remember the good old days when you had to travel to Northern Iowa, and it was a scary one. That before the ball was even kicked, everybody knew that something was up. Can't say that's the same in North Dakota. This is a unit led by Eric Schmidt that all facets of the game, they just do all of the little things right. Again, this North Dakota team doesn't scare you when they get off the bus. I feel like I say that every single week, but if you're Northern Iowa, you should be scared when these guys get off the bus because they're ready to rock and roll.
Number 24, Yale, is at number 12, Lehigh. I like this Yale football team. A lot of people don't, but a lot of people love Lehigh. I like Lehigh. I'm not in love with them. I've been impressed with them. We're going to finally find out if there's maybe 2 really good teams in the Ivy League this year, Yale and possibly Harvard, who we're going to talk to Tom Barton about in just a little bit. But this Bulldogs team, you want to answer some questions about who you are, What you got going for you? What people can expect? Well, go and handle a top 15 Lehigh team on the road, and a lot of people will stop asking those questions. Nichols is at number 13, Lamar. Lamar let Central Arkansas up off the canvas last week. This is a Nichols team who I think when they beat Incarnate Word, thought the rest of the season was going to be easy or something. They have not looked good since then, and I can't put my finger on why, because they have the pieces. The quarterback is good. They've got some dudes on defense. This is a scary game for Lamar, because Nichols, at 1-4, they're starting to see any hope for anything beyond this season to be just like last season was. And that's a dangerous mindset to be in if you're the opponent, because they got absolutely nothing to lose. The Colonels are back into a corner here, Stone, and I expect him to come out with guns a-blazing.
Yeah, on one hand, you have a Lamar team that has to bounce back, and on the other, you have a 1-4 Nichols team who, like you had mentioned, when they beat Incarnate Word, we thought, oh, wow, Deuce Hogan's good. This team's good. In a conference that is typically mixy, and there's a chance that can be snagged at any year, at any season. They're trending in the wrong direction, and Lamar has a chance to. One of my favorite spots for teams is when you play like crap, or when you come out of the gates in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, you're just stalling, you can't get anything going, you're getting scored on, and you watch that tape back, and everything that you did in the first half, you go and put on display in the very next game. It happens all the time. These teams who almost let games slip or things get awkward down the stretch seem to play really, really well right as that first ball gets kicked, and I think that's the case in this one. I think Lamar is a team to look out for, a team that not a lot of people are paying attention to, and I think they like it like that. They're sitting in the blind spot, and they just got to get rid of teams like Nichols, because they're going to be favored, and they just got to do it. Lamar has to prove that they're deserving to be in the top 15, and they got to do it every single week, prove to us that they deserve to be there.
Number 14, UC Davis is at Cal Poly. Cal Poly was impressive last week in a win over Sacramento State, a Sacramento State team that had creeped back into some people's top 25s and whose fans were not afraid to let us know that we didn't know ball, because we weren't one of the media outlets that put their team back in the top 25. That's tough sledding, man, when you talk that and then you lose to Cal Poly, ain't it? But UC Davis put up a lot of points against Weber State last week. I think Cal Poly is better than Weber State. Passing game is good. The defensive secondary is full of ball hawks. Had a couple of interceptions from one guy last week. This is a scary ball game for UC Davis. A very scary game for the Aggies on the road at Cal Poly, who's riding about as high as they have in years. I like Cal Poly in this spot to give Davis all they want. Potential upset, perhaps.
Potential upset for sure, and I would go off on Sacramento State right now, but there's no point, because 40 minutes into the show, there are absolutely zero Sacramento State fans even listening, because they know we're not talking about them. You lose to a Cal Poly team. You didn't just lose to this Poly team. You got beat. This team, coming off of that win, I don't think there's that much that differentiates a UC Davis and a Sacramento State squad. Now, execution, whole other thing. But who they are on a scouting report and a lot of what you see schematically is eerily similar when it comes to the explosive things that they like to do and the shots that they like to take down the field and the kind of scatty guys they have playing quarterback here. This is a UC Davis team that is on upset alert. This is a Cal Poly team that is playing with full-blown confidence right now. Circle this one, please. I'm telling you. Trust us.
Number 16, West Georgia, is at number 21, Austin Peay. West Georgia runs the football, plays good defense. Austin Peay has been an up-and-down team so far. Guess who's been extremely consistent, though? West Georgia. Consistent. Steady Eddie-type ball club. That's the way you get great things done, is by playing well every week, knowing what you're going to do and what you're about. This West Georgia team is definitely that type of a football team. Stephen F. Austin is at number 19, Incarnate Word. Incarnate Word got back in the top 25 by absolutely whipping Abilene Christian last week, and they did it by running the football, not with the flashy passing game that we have been accustomed to seeing Incarnate Word do for years. They got back to basics, back to good, solid team football, run the ball, play defense. There's a reason why that has always been a recipe for success in FCS football. SFA, they hadn't really beat anybody. And I just look at this as a matchup for one of these teams is going to take a giant step forward for their season, and one of them is going to start looking at their season like it may be almost over. This is a huge game in the Southland Conference. East Tennessee State is at number 23, Furman. This is almost a playoff game. In week 6, The SoCon has not shown well outside of conference games so far this year. It has not gone well for the SoCon. That's an understatement, y'all. And it hurts me. It hurts my heart. But they have some pretty good football teams. And if they can avoid beating up on one another, we'll see that play out down the road. East Tennessee State, I worry about this team. 2 weeks in a row, they have been right there at the cusp of victory, even leading the game, and had teams come back down the field and take their will, take their heart, and take a victory from them. Things could really come apart in Johnson City if they don't get this game at number 23 Furman. It could get ugly in a hurry. It's time for us to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll be joined by Mr. Tom Barton, and we'll break down everything having to do with the Ivy League. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Hail to thee, old Ivy League. Poison Ivy League.
Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. We're now very pleased to be joined by Mr. Tom Barton. Tom is our Ivy League correspondent, among other things that Tom Barton does. He's a man of many parts, perhaps a Renaissance man, an Ivy League man, and they say that they need no introduction. Thanks for being here, Tom.
Thank you for having me, man. It's going to be fun.
So the Ivy so far, what do we know? What do we think we know? Where are we headed? It's very, very confusing. They start so late that you almost forget about them, and then when they start, they come in like gangbusters. It's a really interesting thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, in a way, it's the beauty of the Ivy League. It's short, it's quick, it's boom, here you go, and then you got to kind of get out of the way. So you don't have any time to sort of get your feet wet, right? In the Ivy Leagues, it's game one, game two, we already know who you are. At least that's where it's been historically. And historically, there is a very big separation. There's usually three or four good teams, three or four bad teams. The end. And I don't think this year is any different. We have watched Harvard come out of the gates really, really strong. We've watched teams come out of the gates and just falter. And then you have a team like Brown wins their first game 46-0, and then it gets blasted by Harvard 52-7. How do you look at that and kind of determine that team, even though they're in that middle grouping? This is where the Ivy League gets really quick, really fast. You better make your assumptions right away, and they're going to prove them or disprove them in a heartbeat.
For the audience members who don't know, the passion from Tom Barton for the Ivy League came from where?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've always been, obviously, a sports fan. I've been in sports radio since I'm 19 years old, and I went back to Harvard later on in life. I just wanted to always do that. And I had too many things with career and my family problems, which I had, extensively talked about. I didn't get a chance, and I had an opportunity to go back to Harvard. What are you going to do? You're going to go back. And I lived in New York, and I drove 3.5 hours, 3 days a week to go back up to school. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. What I loved was the purity of the game. There was no instant replay. There was, a quick, like you said, quick schedule. It felt almost like a really glorified high school situation, but the passion that people had and the drive, they didn't care about the rest of it. When Harvard played Yale, Alabama doesn't exist. It doesn't matter about, the BCS standings. It doesn't matter. This is what matters. And you go, wow, living in a world where I don't have to worry about polling and ranking and who ESPN likes and who the SEC is. No. Who wins, who wins, who wins, and that's it. Who wins out? If there's three teams that win out, we all split the title. There was a purity about that I really did enjoy.
Well, I think more highly of Yale so far than you do, Tom.
Yeah, you do.
Pitzenberger is a dude who runs the ball for the Yale Bulldogs. I like the way that they're playing football right now. We're going to find out a lot about Yale this week as they're on the road at ranked Lehigh.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the problem is that right now where Yale, and we've had this conversation, I don't buy into Yale right now. They had a quarterback question. There was a lot of defensive issues that I just wasn't sure about. Now, look, you could say that they've gone out there and proved it against who? Holy Cross is garbage. I'm sorry. They are. They're garbage, right? And then Cornell, who goes up into Albany and loses 13-10, they couldn't generate an offense. So to me, Yale has played nobody. You could say they were impressive against nobody, but they were still played nobody. Now, Lehigh is a real team, and it's a real road game. And we're going to see how this team reacts, but a team that comes in with quarterback questions, questions are just surrounding the team, and then plays two nobodies. I'm not ready to elevate. Not yet. We'll talk next week.
Then who are you ready to elevate on? You talked about there being four teams, and there's just a wide gap. I don't even think there's four this year, but yeah. For those who aren't as tapped into the Ivy, who are you bullish on, and who are you opposing Kevin's Yale take with?
Look, the best player in the Ivy Leagues is Jaden Craig, the quarterback, right? I mean, he just flat out is. He's one of the best players in the FCS. He's, you know, up for numerous FCS awards, preseason watch lists, and things of that nature. So you give me the best player in the Ivy Leagues. Harvard comes out as 38-point favorites in game one, and they cover the spread, right? I mean, yes, they played nobody. We're going to say that, but they covered the spread. And then they take on a Brown team that won 46-0 the day before or the week before, and Harvard blasts them as well. And it's not just offense, it's the defense also. It's the defense not allowing more than one touchdown a game. Harvard's elite. Dartmouth has the opportunity to be elite, and I think that they have an elite team, even though maybe it hasn't gelled yet. I'm afraid of Dartmouth if I am anybody else in this conference. You're looking at Dartmouth as one of those teams. Princeton had a bad run of it last year. Princeton was a bottom-of-the-barrel team, and I know that people still want to elevate them, but I'm not elevating them. I still think Columbia this week against Princeton could be that team. I think right now you have two strong top teams. Yale could be that next team, and the winner of that Princeton-Columbia team is in that top four. Brown, Penn, Cornell, you know, these teams are just on the lower half. Right now it's two, maybe Yale joins that, and the winner of that Princeton-Columbia game is really going to have to be considered to join.
The champion is going to receive an automatic bid to the FCS playoffs. For people who haven't followed the Ivy League because they knew they were never going to see them, what should they be looking for? Describe an Ivy League champion football team. Good skill position players, good quarterback, defense. What are they going to see in that first round of the FCS playoffs this year against competition they know what it is?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to answer it. It's going to sound like an insult, but it's not meant to be. Think about 1980s, 1990s football. That's what you're going to get. There's a lot of H-back motion. There's a lot of H-back being used. There's tight end play. There is a mistake-free, unbothered offense. Defense doesn't always blitz, but they're going to try to get pressure on you. It's a different game than what I think a lot of the country is used to when they're watching specifically the FBS, but even the upper echelon teams. You have the option still in play in some spots. You have a lot of quirky things that seem weird now, but back then it didn't. We got a fullback carry who's going to lead the team with 14 carries that day. That's not unusual in the Ivy Leagues because it's that kind of brand of football. To beat an Ivy League team, when the FCS does get to the playoffs, to beat an Ivy League team, you better not make mistakes. You better not go for that big giant play. Be okay that you're more athletic than that team and take what is given to you, as opposed to pushing it down the field and trying to make something happen. Guys like Kyle Juszczyk crushed it. Cameron Brate crushed it. They weren't strictly tight ends or fullbacks. They were H-backs. To come out of this and think that your fullback can't lead the team in receptions that day, you have another thing coming. So they're a well-disciplined, well-educated, and smart team that isn't going to make mistakes. That's going to be your Ivy League champion.
What's funny to me, you're using the phrase H-back so poetically. I, as a former quarterback, the generational gap, what you're referring to H-back and what I know as H-back is just on two different planets. And I know it gets Kevin going because an H-back is a real thing. It's a grown-ass man. That's how you translate what an H-back was. And now it's typically your kid who weighs 165 pounds soaking wet, is going to get his touches and all this and all that. It's just funny to me how you use it because I know who you're talking about, right? But today's game, you don't see him, but you do see him in the Ivy. Tom, what made the Council of Presidents pull the trigger in December of 2024? What was it that you think was the final straw that said, okay, fine, here we come, we're dancing?
You know, it's another great question. I'm not sure. I've wrestled with this myself because it's been presented in front of them before. You can't say it's the money thing because, let's be honest, they have more money than you guys all, combined. And I'm not talking about FCS, you guys. I'm talking about FCS. You know, I had somebody tell me one time, basically like, We use Alabama's NIL as like our placemats. I mean, literally, that's what it is. So it's not the money thing, but I do think it's the exposure. I think the Ivy Leagues in political culture have taken a knock recently. I think the Ivy Leagues in the worldview have taken a knock recently. And a lot of what they do is, hey, you know what? We're Harvard. We're Yale. We're Princeton. You come to us because that's who we are. Well, you start to lose that a little bit, especially on the athletic field. No, let's go show them. Let's go compete with them. I'm sure money absolutely spelled the day at the end of the day. But when the NIL deals came out and you start to see the college landscape change, I think they understood. Look, we are behind the times. Let's get with the times and at least give exposure to our teams. And we don't need the exposure per se, but we'd like it because they're all egomaniacs and they want the exposure.
Well, I used to say that I thought that the Ivy League was the Globo Gym of NCAA football. You know, they're better than you and they know it, right? And so I thought there was maybe some elitism there. You know, they didn't want to go to Fargo, North Dakota and play against the great unwashed and get beat by five touchdowns, right? But I'm very interested to see how this is going to play out. And the first round of the FCS playoffs is something that really is interesting, not by the outcomes, because we probably know what those are going to be, but I'm going to be more locked in this year to the first round games than I am at any time in the last 25 years, dude.
Yeah, look, we talked about this off the air where it is, do I think that a Harvard this year is going to go to, Montana or North Dakota and put up a fight? No, I don't think so. But I don't think they care. I don't think they care. They want to say, hey, well, look, we're doing it differently than you guys. Look at what we can do. We're in a different league. But I think they will start to care. I think in time, you're going to see the Ivy Leagues completely change. And people I've spoken to in the inner circles, I think we all understand where this is going. And when they do finally say, okay, here you go. We're now opening up the purse strings. I think everybody in the FCS is done. It is finished. And this is not being an egomaniac. It's not being, an Ivy League elitist in any way, shape, or form. I don't think anybody understands the money they can throw down if they started to do NIL. Remember, these guys don't give scholarships. So do I think that the elite in the FCS is better than the elite in the Ivy Leagues today? Absolutely. But when will it take their ego to get beaten down 55-7 in snowy, Fargo in December or January? When will it take that? And how many years will it take that for them to go, you know what? We're going all out. It almost reminds me, oh my goodness, people are going to be like, this guy and his Ivy League stuff almost reminds me of the Dream Team, right? When you're talking about basketball around the world. Oh, look, we're as good as the Americans. But yeah, but we're not sending our best. Eventually, it got to a point where like, that's it. We're sending Jordan Malone, Bird Magic. Here we go. And I think eventually Ivy Leagues are going to go, no, watch what we now send. And it's just a matter of between now and then, can they stay competitive? Can they put up a good fight? Can they be in the top 25 conversation? Can they be relevant enough to get the attention on them without having to say, you know what, we're going after the number one championship?
You know, I coach football at the high school level down here in the hotbed of high school football, South Florida, and the names do come up. Like, I think the conversation has at least started. There are parents that I meet whose dad's belt is so tight and the collar's buttoned up all the way, and he's an Ivy League grad, and his kid is growing up the right way and a really disciplined kid, and I'm like, this kid is a ball player. Like, this kid can go play at South Carolina tomorrow, but he's gonna make that decision. I've seen a few kids trickle in the line, so I not only like what you said there as far as the tables will turn. I love it. Now I'll propose this to you, and it's tough on the spot. But let's just say Harvard is the example here. So they're not with the elites. Are they going to contend in the postseason early? No, we don't think so. But what is the kind of team who's an example that will be giving Harvard 10 points that Harvard could snipe? Is it like a Furman team? Is it like a North Dakota team, not North Dakota State? Is it a, a Monmouth, an Incarnate Word? Like, what team in the that will be in the postseason? Do you think, okay, they're giving me 10. I think this is actually something that can happen. Like, who are those teams?
Yeah, you named quite a few of them. I think it's teams that don't have, look, Harvard has a good secondary. I'm not saying that they don't. It's teams that are not going to be have the ability to score 62, 65, 75. It's not those explosive offenses. over the course of the game are eventually gonna grab Harvard. But you want to play a down and dirty game, you want to run, you want to play, fundamental football, Harvard will stay with you, and Craig will have enough to turn around and go, oh my goodness, we just beat North Dakota, right? I look at it, I do a lot of work with the Mount West, and there are times over the last 10 years where I've said, you know what, Harvard could beat two or three teams in the Mountain West. I mean, and I wasn't, just waxing poetic. I really believe that. It depends on the style of team that you're talking about. I mean, you're the elites of the elites. Forget that, right? UC Davis is a team this year that I think has taken a giant step back after what they did last year. Could I see Harvard giving UC Davis, Harvard 17 and a half point underdog, give me the points all day and they lose by seven? Yeah, I could see something like that happen. These are the kind of games where it's going to frustrate them. Dartmouth, the same kind of team. Good defense, limit possessions, run that clock out, just eat the ball. Frustrating those teams. Those are the kind of teams. So I would say, look, at the end of the year, is Harvard going to be a top five ranked team? Absolutely not. Should they be a top 10 ranked team? Probably not. I could see them hovering in that 12 to 15 range and being able to compete with those teams in that 12 to 15 range.
Tom, where can people find you on socials and on the web?
Guys, go check me out. It's TomBartonSports.com, Tom Barton Sports over on the X. And I'm saying X. I'm not saying Twitter anymore. That took forever, right? Go check me out on the on X. You guys hit me up at TomBartonSports@gmail.com if you want to have a conversation with me. Anywhere I have, podcasts, Believe in Betting. I have an Ivy League podcast, Believe in the Ivy League. That's BLEAV. I'm on Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. So I'm all over the place. Type in Tom Barton Sports, you'll find me.
Thanks for making the time, Tom. We really appreciate it. And also, plug that column you're writing for us at FCSNationRadio.com every week.
Oh, it's fantastic. Look, what I'm doing is I'm going to break down last week's games briefly and then look ahead. And, I think this week was a pretty good indication where I could give you guys. I absolutely love points in the Lehigh game, 74 points scored, right? By the way, if you're a sports bettor, I don't know if you are, the spread on that was 48, 48 and a half. Yeah, that blew it out of the water. You look at, what Yale did this week. We talked about the Harvard game. That was a tiny spread. Look, I'm going to break the games down. Doesn't matter, spread or not even sports betting, but if you are into that, break the game down, kind of give you my lean where it is, what the teams need to go on and take on these non and real in-conference games as well, and then look ahead every single time. It's looking ahead to the weekend with an eye of what just happened.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for my favorite time of the week, y'all. This is the picks segment. This is where Stone Lebanowitz and I butt face mask, and we pick the biggest games taking place in FCS football. Up first, number one, North Dakota State is at number three, Illinois State.
The Bison and the Bison by a lot. I'm not going to sit here and say Illinois State has a shot in this one because they don't. North Dakota State, 40. Illinois State, 14.
Too much Cole Payton and that Bison offense, and the NDSU defense will do what they've done all year. They'll stifle the Redbirds. Take number one, North Dakota State on the road, 34-17. Number two, South Dakota State is at Youngstown State.
Jackrabbits go hopping along all over these Penguins. Good luck out there, Youngstown State. South Dakota State, the final here, 35-14.
Jackrabbits were impressive last week. The only problems they had were penalties in the red zone. I believe they'll clean that up, and I believe they'll be even better this week against Youngstown State. Take number two, South Dakota State on the road over Youngstown State, 38-20. Number three, Montana is at Idaho State.
Like I said, Little Stein in one hand, pistol in the other. They're going Idaho, then to Idaho State. Two victories back-to-back. Montana Grizzlies, 30. Idaho State's 10.
The Grizz will take their show on the road this week, and it'll be a pleasant trip to Pocatello. Take number three, Montana, to complete the sweep of the Idaho FCS teams. Grizz win 31-20. Southern Utah is at number four, Tarleton State.
I want to see points here. I think we will see points here. Tarleton State, 45. Southern Utah, 28.
The bye week came at a perfect time for the Tarleton State Texans. They got a little healthier, and they're ready to get back on a roll, and I believe they will. Take number four, Tarleton State, at home over Southern Utah, 42-24. Number five, Montana State, is at number 17, Northern Arizona.
Montana State wins, but not as much as most people think. Give me the Bobcats, 28 to Northern Arizona's 24.
Better Montana State teams than this one have gone into Flagstaff and struggled. It is a tough place to play. Northern Arizona quarterback Ty Pennington can really spin it, but the question for me is, can that Lumberjack defense stand up to Montana State's run game for four quarters? I don't think they can. Take number 5, Montana State on the road over number 17, Northern Arizona, in a close one. Cats win 35-34. Indiana State is at number 6, Southern Illinois.
Southern Illinois and Southern Illinois only. Give me the Salukis, 45 to Indiana State's 7.
Not a whole lot to see here, y'all. I just don't see the trees putting up much of a fight. Take the Salukis to trim the trees at home, 38-10. Western Illinois is at number 7, Tennessee Tech.
There's not a damn thing that anybody can do to get into this Tennessee Tech's team's way. It's definitely not the Leathernecks. Give me Tech, 45 to Western Illinois, 3.
Golden Eagles, they are just putting it on people so far, y'all. And that's going to continue here. Take number 17, Tennessee Tech at home, 40-7. Delaware State is at number 9, Monmouth.
Delaware State better have their track shoes on because they're about to be in a race. And if they're not up for it, it'll be a boat race. Give me Derek Robertson and this Monmouth squad. 38 to Delaware State's 14.
Derek Robinson can have a ho-hum day in this one. And if it's a ho-hum day for him, he'll throw for 400 yards and the Hawks will win 48-21. Number 10, North Dakota is at Northern Iowa.
North Dakota, Eric Schmidt. This team's playing really good football right now. Dare I say the best that I've seen them play in 2 or 3 seasons? Give me the Fighting Hawks, 35 to Northern Iowa's 10.
The Fighting Hawks, they're going to show that their road woes are really a thing of the past, and they'll whip you and I. Take number 10, North Dakota, on the road over Northern Iowa, 34-24. Number 24, Yale, is at number 12, Lehigh.
God, I struggle with this one. Give me Lehigh, 21 to Yale's 20.
I'm higher on Yale than most people, and I'm going to stick with that. Take number 24, Yale, over number 12, Lehigh, and the upset special of the week, number 1. Yale wins 30-26. Nichols is at number 13, Lamar.
Lamar needs this one, and I think they get this one. Give me Lamar, 28 to Nichols, 17.
Need to see a four-quarter opening whistle to final gun type of effort from Lamar. I think we get that this week. But the Colonels, they have some dudes on that defense. This will be a tight, physical game, but Lamar will win 24-20. Number 14, UC Davis is at Cal Poly.
I'm so close to pulling this trigger. I just can't do it. I want to. I'm not going to. Give me the Aggies here, 28 to Cal Poly's 21.
Cal Poly is much improved, and I'm still not sold on Davis being as good as some people think they are, but they'll do enough here just to slip by Cal Poly. Take Davis on the road over Cal Poly, 31-28. Number 16, West Georgia, is at number 21, Austin Peay.
Austin Peay's going to win this football game. I'm so sorry, West Georgia. We've been on this train together for 5 weeks now. Seems like we've been best friends, been following every single move that you guys make, but I'm giving up on you for 1 week and 1 week only. Give me the Governors, 40 to West Georgia's 28.
That bunch of wolves from Georgia have made me look foolish 5 weeks in a row, and I don't mind telling y'all that I don't need their help to look that way. I can do that all on my own, but I still think Austin Peay is going to win this game at home. Take Austin Peay, number 21, the Governors, with a win over number 16, West Georgia, in upset special of the week, number 2. Govs win 31-24. Stephen F. Austin is at number 19, Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word 30, Stephen F. 10. This one's easy going for the Cards.
Huge game in the Southland Conference. Stephen F. Austin really hasn't beat anyone, and UIW feels like they saved their season last week. Well, I believe they saved it for about a week. Take Stephen F. Austin on the road and upset special number 3, 28-24 SFA. East Tennessee State is at number 23, Furman.
Give me Furman here. Not by much, though. 21-20 the final. The way of the Paladins. Close one.
The Bucks need this game in the worst way. Furman, they're not quite back to their 2023 form yet,
and they are gettable even in Greenville. If the Bucks don't get this one, I know I said it earlier, I'm going to say it again, it could get ugly in Johnson City. I don't think they get it. Take number 23, Furman, at home in a close one. Paladins win 28-27. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted and produced by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.